Okay, folks, we switched. Menkes is no longer teaching the course. I am teaching it starting today, so you still have one more day, I guess, to get out. Let's see, can we move this? Okay. The office hours for the semester are going to be right after the class, 4:30 to 5:30. And then, of course, if you can't make it and you need to talk to me at a different time, just send me an email. Okay. So, just to get some sense of what went through and what did not, here are a couple of things that you should probably know from last class. Are there things there that you don't understand? Factored versus explicit state models. Okay, this is a graduate class, so I'm assuming that if you don't say I don't know, then I assume you know. That's all. Okay, normally do it for any class, but definitely here. Okay, so is there anything here that you want me to go over again? Yes. Yeah. So conditional effects are essentially are effects of the kind where you are saying fly from A to B, let's say. Okay, fly from X to Y. And it has obviously a precondition, which is that at plane X in the beginning, the plane is at X, okay, and then there is a post condition which is at plane Y. That much is for sure, but then everybody who is inside the plane at the beginning is going to be at Y after the action is over. Okay, now how do we express that? You can't express that as a precondition. You being in the plane is not a precondition for plane to take off. Okay, if you went late, you are not in the plane, it will still take off. Okay, you just won't be in the place where you wanted to go. Okay, so the best way to write that kind of an effect, so you want to express that everybody who is inside the plane in the beginning will be at Y at the end. Okay, so that's, and so you would say for all Z in plane Z, I mean, I'm making this syntax up. As you know by now, I'm assuming that syntax has nothing, I mean, you can make up any predicate names as long as you're consistent, it's fine. Okay, in plane Z implies at the Y. So everything which is in the plane to begin with is at Y at the end. Okay, that's a conditional effect. So now the interesting thing about conditional effects is that to some extent the antecedents of the conditional effects are conditions that must hold before the action, and the consequence are conditions that must hold, that will hold after the action. Okay, so in a way this looks like a normal logical implication, but looks can be deceiving. Okay, if it's a logical implication, P implies Q is nothing but not P or Q, right? And if you allow disjunction in the effect, then it's not a deterministic action anymore, because you said, for example, the plane says, you know, can I have, for example, a post condition, fly X to Y, can I have a post condition at plane Y or at plane, you know, W? So if it, either it goes to after, you know, taking off from X, either it goes to Y or to W, I don't know upfront. There's nothing wrong with such an action, You know, if you get hijacked during the plane, then you go somewhere else other than where you wanted to go. There's nothing wrong with that action. It's just not deterministic. You cannot predict exactly what happens at the end of the action. Okay? In deterministic actions, you do not allow disjunction in the effects. Okay? And so the point I was, this point here is, having conditional effects makes it look as if you are allowing disjunction in the effects. But it's not, because the P here is something that must be true in the previous situation, and Q here will be true in the next situation. So there's the action, the preceding situation, the state just before the action, and the state right after the action. So conditional effects really talk about what, you know, if you have this before, then this will be true after. Okay? And it's a very useful way. Most of the time we would be talking about non-conditional effects, you know, when we introduce algorithms. But it's actually quite useful to think about conditional effects. Okay? In fact, there are many, many scenarios where it's actually hard to talk about preconditions for an action. Okay? I mean, the problem in strips representation is, if in a state S, okay, I try to do an action whose preconditions are not satisfied in that action, then the world comes to an end. Basically, you have no more future because the future is undefined now. Okay? That's basically how you define, you know, state transition of actions. But suppose, suppose things like to be able to lift something, it should be liftable. Okay, and so I should be able to lift it, in which case that's a precondition. It should be something that I am actually able to lift. And then when I do the lift action, which is do like this, it will come up. Okay. Now, in the strips terminology, if you just write it as an executable precondition, suppose I try to lift this, you know, does the world end? I mean, obviously, clearly, this is not the kind of thing that I can lift, in case you can't tell. Okay. But I can try, and the world isn't ending. What happened? The world just remains in the same place as before. Okay. So many things that we write normally as preconditions are really conditional effects. Okay. So Rao can do lift action, and if it in fact was liftable, you know, for his resources, then in the next state it would be lifted. Okay. And so anyway, conditional effects are actually more natural, but we won't talk about them. Normally we'll just talk about preconditions and effects, and then always talk about how to handle conditional effects in each of the algorithms. Okay. So when we look at a planning search strategy like progression or regression or the plan space planning, you should think in the back of your head, how would I do conditional effects? Okay. Other things? Anything else here that you don't know? Yes.
So just to find the second line of that, why the disjunction P or Q is not allowed in deterministic planning?
Yeah.
Is this, it's a little unconnected, but is this the same reason it's not allowed in GDDL, for example?
Yeah, but basically, if you have disjunction in effects, then the world is not predictable. It's not deterministic. So it's not surprising that non-determinism is not allowed in deterministic planning. Okay. By the way, who is the scribe for today? You? Okay. Good. So you are, that's the non-determinism issue. So can you have disjunctive preconditions? In deterministic planning, can you have disjunctive preconditions? Yeah. So can you have disjunctive goals? Yes. By the way, think about the following thing. These are sort of funny shortcuts. Goals and preconditions are very connected. Okay? Goals and preconditions are connected. Why? Because you can actually think of the top level goals themselves. If you have multiple goals, you can always make a dummy action whose single effect is to say done, and whose preconditions are the original top level goals. It's just a simple syntactic transformation. Okay, so anything that's true for preconditions is also true for goals. Okay, so if you can allow disjunctive goals, then you can allow disjunctive preconditions. And similarly, effects and the initial state are connected. Okay, so can you have disjunctive initial state? That means I'll say I have an initial state where I don't know whether P is true or Q is true. Not in deterministic planning. Well, actually, no, in the following sense. So if you remember your 471, having disjunction in the initial state is not about deterministic versus stochastic. What is it about? It's about observability, accessibility. Is it fully observable or partially observable? Okay, so you can, to some extent, actually do deterministic planning starting with an uncertain initial state. So you don't quite know which initial state you are in, but you do deterministic planning. So this is the bomb in the toilet problem that, by the way, I have to say, as I probably mentioned last time, there are too many people here who I know. So in fact, the people that I don't know, you should make sure that you come and tell me, you know, introduce yourself to me. And one thing I'm going to probably wind up doing is I'm going to just assume that you all know what I did in 471, because most of you actually did take 471 with me, okay? But those of you who didn't, please feel free to stop me and say, tell me that again, okay? That's easier than just assuming and redoing everything again. Okay, so where were we? So you can think of disjunctive initial state, the bomb in the toilet problem is a scenario where you have a disjunctive initial state followed by deterministic action. Okay. But it is nice to think in terms of preconditions being connected to goals and effects being connected to initial state. In terms of,
But that's not really classical planning, right? That's more like continuation.
Yes, so classical planning makes lots of, so basically the quote-unquote classical planning is deterministic dynamics, full observability on the initial state, and what else? Instantaneous actions, what else? What? Single agent, nobody else other than you. What? Finite state space, continuous versus, you know, finite state variables. So we made our life really, really simple. What's interesting is the problem is hard even in that. Okay, and then we'll keep adding everything back, and then, you know, we'll see where it goes. Okay. Okay. Then anything else on this? Multivalued fluence is essentially it's basically like true and false values are Boolean fluence. Okay, if those of you know, remember from the CSP versus SAT, CSP versus SAT. Okay, so CSP has multi-valued fluence, multi-valued variables. Okay, in some cases it is easier to think in terms of multiple a state variable with multiple values rather than a state variable with two values, true and false. So the general state variable model that we will keep, you know, using most of the time, you can come to the state variable model from two different places. One is from things like control theory, where you essentially say the world is defined in terms of n state variables. These can be continuous or finite. And in our case, we'll assume finite, discrete state variables. So a discrete state variable will have finite number of discrete values. Okay, now you can also come to state variable model from the propositional logic side, in which case you essentially tend to think of Boolean state variables. Okay, but you can always, you know, given a domain, the more natural way of expressing it might sometimes be to have some variables which are really multi-valued and some variables which are Boolean. Okay. But again, PDDL representation that's currently there at any rate essentially assumes everything is Boolean. Okay, but you don't lose any expressiveness. You know, as you know, CSPs can be compiled down to SAT and vice versa. Efficiency is a different issue, but you know, expressiveness is not lost. Anything else here? What's TRIPS assumption? So Stripp's assumption is this seemingly simple assumption which says that if an action is going to change the value of a state variable, it better say so explicitly. There is no indirect effect. Everything is direct. So if you given an action, if a state variable is not appearing in the effects of the action, it's not going to change when you do this action. That's what Stripp's assumption is. And it looks like a very simple, reasonable assumption, except we'll see, I think you may have seen last time too, that sometimes for modularity purposes, it's easier to, you know, state the proximal effects of an action and let some of the rest of the effects be derived. Okay? And Stripp's, because you, if you have Stripp's assumption, you cannot do that. Essentially, you have to write every little indirect effect has to be listed. So it makes the life of the domain writer miserable. Okay? But then it makes the life of the planner, which is this program, easy. Okay? That's the thing. Anything else on this? Okay. So we are, this is all review. We looked at this. This is Boolean multi-valued fluent stuff. We looked at this. Okay. So you looked at something like a blocks world description like this. This could be, you could use this. Here are some actions and the preconditions and effects. And effects essentially tell you how, which of the state variables would have their values changed and how. And if a state variable doesn't appear in the effects, then it's not going to change. Okay? And preconditions tell you which state variables must have what values before this action can be done. Okay? And if you try to do the action when in a state where these are not holding, then the output is undefined. Okay? And you can always take an action like this and convert it into an action which doesn't get into this undefined state by getting rid of all the preconditions and making the whole thing a conditional effect. Okay, so there are no preconditions anymore. You just say if handEmpty and clearX and onTableX, then the conjunction of this whole thing. A single conditional effect. That's it. Okay. In that case, then you are always, you know, you can always do an action in any state. Okay. So in the second case, action would be a total function. That means for any state, you can apply the action and a new state would be defined. Okay, which should be the same as previous state if, in fact, the preconditions are not holding. In the normal case, actually, the way we are writing it, it's a partial function. Okay, fine. So did you guys look at PDDL? I mean, I'm not going to go into the language. You will have a chance to probably write a couple of domains, but essentially there is like a language standard that people agreed upon to write these kinds of actions and their effects and preconditions. Okay, and so it would allow you to define domains and define problems in the domain. And domains are defined in terms of the actions, their preconditions, and their effects. Problems are defined in terms of what's true in the initial state and what must be true in the goal state. In this kind of planning, that's the only thing that you care about. Okay. So here are examples. So in PDL, an action which has the following preconditions and the following effects would get written something like this. And it's a very lispy syntax. It's lots of parentheses. Okay. And the reason that is the case is Drew McDermott wrote it. There's a guy called Drew McDermott whose name you'll keep hearing. And he likes Lisp. And everybody in the old days used to love Lisp. And the one way you can tell the difference between older and smarter people like myself and younger and not so smart people like you is that, you know, we like Lisp. Anyway, PDDL, so the actions will look like this. Okay. So the rest of the standard, you can look it up and you can, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm not going to go into that. So the question that I'm going to do today, the main thing that I want to do today is look at various ways in which given, you know, a series, a set of actions formalizing a domain and an initial state and a goal state, how would you come up with a sequence of actions that will take you from the initial state to the goal state? That's what the classical planning problem is. Okay. So obviously, by the time you came here from CSE 471, you know at least two ideas. You can start from the initial state. You can start from the initial state, which is complete. Okay. What does complete mean? That means every state variable's value is known. Okay. Which means if I didn't write some state variables here, that's because I know they are false. So everything that's true is written, and everything that's false, I guess, by convention, ignore. Okay. And I can only do it if it's a complete state. If it's an incomplete state, I can't do that, because when I didn't write something, is it because I don't know what its value is, or is it because it's negative? Okay. So I start with a complete initial state, and then I basically simulate. I consider doing action pick up A, pick up B. And by the way, I think the problem for this was, I forgot to write it. No, it's here. A second. The problem for this, and remember this, A is on table, B is on table, A is clear, B is clear, and is empty, and my goal is to make sure that B is not clear, and hand should be empty. It's kind of a slightly, you know, given the simple two-block scenario, this is a slightly sneaky problem. You know, it's not particularly sneaky. And then I want a goal, which I can't write a picture of very easily, okay, where B should not be clear. I'm sorry, B should not be clear, and hand should be empty. Okay? And so all I do need to do in this case is, you know, consider doing, starting from the initial state, basically develop children states by applying all possible actions that are applicable, generate new states, and you know how to generate new states. Basically, you write down all the state variables which are mentioned in the effects of this action, you copy them down exactly how they appear in the effects. Okay? And everything else that's not mentioned in the effects just comes over from the previous state. So it's almost, you know, doctoring of the state. Yes? What we wanted clear to mean is that there's nobody on top of this block. Okay? Yeah. So that's the thing. And then what's the termination? Termination condition is all the goals that you're looking for are satisfied in a current state. And then, you know, you bring in your entire search background, you know, A star search and local search and whatever search that you like. And all you basically do is child generator function, and you have a termination test. And so you do the search. Yes?
My question is, in this picture, you get also the negative action.
What?
Mm-hmm. And you said that by convention, you ignore them.
Oh, here, no. I just wrote this, yes. So the thing is, when I went from here to here, I wrote everything that is appearing as the effects. I did write them, okay? And now having written all this, actually, what I can do is I can again remove the negative ones. You're right. This is just to help myself, okay? Because if I don't write clear at all, then I would start copying the clear from here. Okay, so everything in red was an effect of pick up A. Having done that, you know, any other variable which, you know, from here is copied over here. Having done that, now I have a complete state, and I can remove all the negative ones. One important thing, of course, as he's pointing out, is if you start from a complete state and you apply a deterministic action, you get a complete state. You know where you are. You do an action that tells you exactly where you're going, so you know where you will be. Okay? So you always search in the space of complete state. Fine? Any questions on this stuff? This is progression planning. Okay. The nice thing to know is, in fact, one of the fastest planners out there actually uses just this idea with heuristics, good heuristics. As you guys kind of know, might remember from your, I mean, as you know from the search, algorithms discussions, The whole point about search is, you know, anybody can write a program. I mean, any problem can be expressed as search. Search is a weak method. Weak method means everything can be written as a search program, search problem. The important thing, of course, then is when you have these two, when you have the initial state, you know you can expand this to get this and expand this to get this. But now neither of these are the goal states, right? Which one do I expand next? And if I have a non-deterministic Turing machine, simple. So I expand everything in parallel, okay? But we don't have one of those. So you need to actually pick a more promising state. And that's where the heuristics come, and we'll spend a lot of time maybe next week talking about good heuristics. But you thought about it, you know, in 471 too, okay? Okay, and then, so this is going in the forward direction, and you can also go in the backward direction. One of the nice things is you have to keep reminding yourself that planning happens where? In the head. Okay, I can plan to bomb this place and still nothing will happen here. And you know, when the constitutional rights were actually there, I wouldn't be put in jail. Right now I'll be put in jail because I just planned. Okay, but planning is in the head. Execution is actually changing the world. Planning is all simulation. Okay, so you have to, ultimately execution always occurs in only one direction, from the initial state forward. Okay, but planning, thinking can happen in any random direction. It can go forward, it can go backward, it can start from the middle, go forward and backward, it can do all sorts of crazy things. And for every sort of crazy thing, you can write a separate search algorithm. Do you understand what I'm saying? We can think about how to achieve a set of goals in all possible ways. You can consider simulating the initial state all the way until you reach a state where all the goals are true, which is what we did in the progression, right? Or I can consider simulating my goals, saying if I have to be there and if I did this action, then what else do I need to do such that after the action I will be in the goal state, which is regression. Okay? And then we'll look at plan space planning, which essentially doesn't even go in any single direction. Okay? But all of this is fine. All of this is part of the course because you're thinking, you're not executing. And once you have the entire plan, you only execute it in the forward direction. That's the only way you can execute a plan. Okay? Now, regression is slightly more interesting than progression in terms of actually understanding what happens, but again, most of you know regression too. The idea there is that you consider doing every action in the backward direction. Okay, so this is your goal state. This is where you need to come from the initial state. So I'll say whatever is the plan, it must have, you know, one of the actions as its last action. So I'll consider each of the possible actions as the last action. So if put down A is the last action, then what must be true before put down A such that after this action I'm done, right? And similarly, if stack AB is the last action, what must be true before this such that after this I'd be done, okay? This process of taking this state over this action to here is called regression. You progress this state over this action to the next state, in the next one, you're regressing the goals over the last action to the previous state. Okay? And the idea of regression is simple enough. That's basically what we are doing. You would consider regressing a state over an action only if two conditions are satisfied. The last action at least gives something that you want. And more importantly, the last action doesn't undo anything that you want. That's actually much more important, because if this guy is the last guy, last action in the plan, and it screws up one of the variables and puts them in the wrong wrong value, then it's over. After that, there is no more action. Right? So that's what we are saying. There is no variable V such that V is given different values by the effects of A and the state S. That's not allowed. If that is, if you do that, then essentially after that action, you can definitely not be in the goal state. Okay? And then the second issue is, this is minimum requirement. This one is, you consider this action because it at least gives one of the things that you want. Okay? Now if you don't satisfy this, that is, there is at least one variable V' such that V' is given the same value by the effects of this action as well as the goal state. Okay? And if you don't satisfy this, the only thing that goes wrong is what? You'll get a plan that's non-minimal. Basically, there are actions which even if you remove them, the plan will still be correct. Right? I mean, in a good plan, every action should have a reason for being there. And if you remove it and your plan still continues, you know, that's like a very worrisome thing. If you're in an organization, you are an entity, and you know, you should always make sure that somehow, you know, you are, that people don't think that you can be removed. You know, if they can easily simulate removal of you and say, yeah, nothing is going to change, maybe improvement will occur, then you'll be gone right away. Okay? So that's the non-minimality there that we're checking. But if those two are satisfied, then what do? You consider the new, you construct this new state, which is the set of goals, that set of variables and the values that you need to satisfy here in the following way. First thing is, anything that's given by this action, it's already given. Every other state variable that I still need a value of, I copy it over. So in this case, put down A gives hand empty, because putting down anything makes your hand empty. Okay, it's not just because I said it, I wrote it that way in the action. Okay, and then, so hand empty doesn't have to be copied over. It's already being given by this guy. The only thing that I need to copy over is not clear B, I copy it over here. Okay. The other thing I need to copy over is, if this guy is going to be the last action and this guy needs some preconditions to be done, who's going to make those preconditions true? Here. Okay? So you would, every variable that occurs in S and does not occur in the effects of A will be copied over, that's this. And then every variable that occurs in the precondition list of A will be copied over too. So in essence, this state is all the preconditions of this action plus anything that this action doesn't already give to this last state. Simple enough, right? Okay, that's it. And this is, now I told you how to generate children for this state by applying actions in the backward direction. Okay, and then when do you stop? Whenever one of these states is already true in the initial state. So these are outstanding goals that you need to satisfy. If you were here, if you wanted not clear B and hand empty, and your friend said, put me in the plan, then all you need to satisfy are these two. And if these two are satisfied in the initial state, you can stop now. Okay, so that's your termination test. Okay? Now, there are all sorts of interesting issues regarding the comparison between this search and the previous search, and we talked about this in 471. For those of you who are hearing it for the first time, it's still worth thinking about whether this is going to be a better search or this one is going to be a better search. Somebody who heard this for the first time, what do you think? Which is going to be a better search? Should you go forward or backward? What? You want to go backward? Why?
More options cut out right from the start.
That's exactly the reason people think going backward is better. Now tell me some reason as to why going forward is better. The answer actually is that I can give you arguments for either way. It turns out the reason backward is considered to be better is exactly because you cut out most of the options, because you know they're not part of the goal state. They're not helping you. Okay, that's a very useful thing to say. But think in terms of the size of the search space, the overall size of the search space. Okay, it's a very useful thing to think of. If you have n Boolean state variables, what's the total number of states that you can potentially have? 2 power n. Okay, There are totally 2 power n states. So this guy is finally searching in the space of 2 power n states. Okay? How about this guy? Is he searching in a bigger or smaller space? There are only real, there are only 2 power n real states. But how many states are this guy searching in? The state here can have, in each of the states here, actually, a state variable can occur positively, occur negatively, or not occur at all. So how many possibilities are there? 3 power n states. In fact, these are not states. These are incomplete states. So they're actually sets of real states. They're only 2 power n real states. Okay? And each thing that you look at here corresponds to a set of real states. Now, many of these can also correspond to an empty set of real states. An empty set of real states. Okay? So, in fact, I mean, the cute thing, and you know, is the first time if you're looking at it, can you tell if any of these states are actually impossible in this domain? Do you see if any of these states are impossible in this domain? This is just 2 blocks, and you guys played with blocks when you were kids. Right? It turns out this is impossible. To understand that, the only way I can get not clear B in this domain is to take A and put it on top of B. Then B will be not clear. What? That's true. Ah, wait, wait.
Which isn't possible because you're holding A.
Yeah, that's true. Okay? So to make, no, but yes, so to the only way to get the whole thing, that is, having not clear B and hand empty, which is what you wanted, is basically to put A on top of B and hand, hold, you know, hand is empty, right? Here, you are holding A. If you're holding A, who is then sitting on top of B? Nobody. So B is clear. So it's not possible for this ever. I mean, there is no real state of the world where both of these are satisfied. Okay, now would you realize this? If you couldn't realize it, obviously your program is not likely to. Okay? Then what would your program do? Your program would then take this dead state, expand it into 5 dead children states, who then will give 25 grandchildren states, and so on and so forth. And expanding dead states is one of the best ways you can keep your computer happy. Right? Because you can keep on, you know, doing a lot of search, not going anywhere. Okay, but in general, it's not all that obvious, you know, to realize that this state is. So one thing you can say is then, why don't we just have a little test before you expand a state, check whether it is actually feasible or not. How hard is that test? If you want that test to be complete and sound, that's just as hard as planning, right? The reason this was actually impossible is because you tried to do a plan from the initial state to this state and prove to yourself that there is no such plan. Okay? So all you can do is try to cut down the obviously dead guys. And, you know, dead guys who haven't started yet having rigor mortis, you continue until they become obviously dead and then you stop. And, you know, this obvious deadness are basically probably cheaper tests that you're using to see for sure that you can't. Yes?
That dead could be a derived characteristic. So that could be in the
yes, basically in this case, the deadness occurs because of the reachability. You know, you could not reach this state from the initial state. And that's how you're dead. But there's another way of being dead, which is I wanted not clear B and clear B together. That everybody knows is dead. Okay. Anyway, so even between these two very simple search strategies, okay, there is this question as to which one does better, and there is no obvious reason to believe that one would dominate the other. Okay. In general, this one searches in the space of complete states, so it will never actually have to worry about expanding a dead state. There is no dead state. It only searches in the space of real state. Okay. But then on the other hand, it doesn't quite, at least the way I wrote it, it doesn't seem to pay any attention to the goals. It just does actions and sees whether you reach somewhere. But then again, if you have heuristics, what are the heuristics supposed to be doing? They're supposed to take the goal into account and tell you which direction to go. So maybe heuristics would help this guy. Okay? And similarly, this guy, without heuristics, right off the bat, as was pointed out, this guy has fewer branching, fewer actions that you would have to consider, because most of them are not even relevant to the few goals you have. Okay? And so it looks like it's a good idea, but then it can get you into states that are dead and you won't realize it. And so you expand them further and further. And of course, you can make heuristics which will tell you that these states are dead. And we'll do that too. And all I can tell you, sort of giving away some of next week's point, is even with heuristics that we currently know, as of the state of the art, this idea actually wins compared to that idea. Okay, and this rest of the class is exactly like this. Even if you fall asleep for the rest of the class, I'll show you even two more algorithms which are even more complicated than this. Both of those are not winning right now. Okay, and I'm doing it in the complete opposite order. I know that during you know, the chemistry classes and the physics classes, you first thought about what's that Thomson model, where you throw in the electrons right in the middle of the nucleus, and then the Bohr model where they happily go around in this nice orbital, and then say both of them are bogus and there's a better way. Okay, here I am actually going in the opposite way. The simplest ideas actually are currently the winning ones, but it is worth understanding the other ones too. Okay, because part of it is because it's planning is not just about generating plans, it's also about reasoning about plans, it's also about managing plans, and it's worth understanding all these ideas anyway. Yes. So, we'll do that. Okay. So, the question is, why should you just go forward from the initial state or backward from the goal state? Okay. In fact, one of the first ideas that was used in planning was neither this, because people thought it was too simplistic, nor this, because they didn't yet think about it. Okay, they instead tried something like this. It actually requires, you know, multiple minutes to explain the idea, and you no longer read about it. In fact, for the last several years, when I teach this course, I no longer describe this idea, and that's why Jay is here, because he doesn't actually know this. But this is what STRIPS the planner did. You know, you hear the word STRIPS a lot of times in this class. Okay, STRIPS is the planner, Stanford Research Institute's planner that ran this Shaky the robot. Okay, and I actually found the video of Shaky running. I'll show you in a minute, but it actually shakes. And it's, it's a, from an AI point of view, it's one of the most influential robots, and it's in the Robot Hall of Fame, and so, so STRIPS basically is the planner. So the STRIPS project, Stanford Shaky project, did a whole bunch of things together. This is a Stanford Research Institute, not Stanford University. SRI Shaky project did a whole bunch of things all at one time. You know, they had to come up with an action representation. They said STRIPS action representation. They had to make sure that they have to decide whether or not all the effects are actually being applied and are being explicitly stated or not. They said we will explicitly state all the effects. And then other people then started calling it STRIPS assumption. And they had to search for plans, and they made one up, and that's called STRIPS the planner. And most people nowadays only remember STRIPS the action language, not STRIPS the planner. So you get to find out, STRIPS the planner. The interesting thing about it is, STRIPS itself, when it started in 1972 time frame, I believe, it actually looked back, and one of the earliest, the very early AI program that was written is this program called GPS, General Purpose Problem Solver, by Newell and Simon. okay, and they were trying to solve problems. And problem has initial state, a goal state, and you're trying to go from the problem, you know, initial state. Why am I getting? Initial state to goal state, and they essentially had to decide a bunch of operators that they have to do on this problem to get to the goal state. So problem solving is very closely connected to planning. So the first time when these guys did, they essentially tried to do GPS. Okay, so you are getting two things at one fell swoop, which is you're understanding what GPS did as well as what strips the planner did. And both of them did do a very reasonable idea, which is basically called means ends analysis. And pay close attention, because there's a fallacy in this. This planner has deep flaws. Okay? And it set the field of planning forward by 20 years and backward by 30 years. Okay? And so that, you know, for the rest after STRIPS paper came up, huge amount of progress was done, also large amount of controversy because all the problems that this particular algorithm has. Okay? So we just skip over most of it, kind of taking an idea as to what are the, you know, fatal flaws. So think of this as, you know, if you have ever taken a physics course with an enterprising guy who then teach you, who show you, for example, how you can, you know, generate energy out of nowhere. And each step looks like it's okay, but then there is a flaw somewhere because of which you are suddenly generating energy, you know, perpetual motion machine. And you know there's something wrong, okay? So you have to figure out what's wrong while we are going through this. Okay, so here's the deal. The idea is that you work, if you have a bunch of goals, G1 to GN, okay? All STRIPS did is consider each goal, try to completely achieve it. So work on making G1 true. So work from initial state to go to a state where G1 is true. Now this is a new state. From here, go to a state where G2 is true. From here, go to a state where G3 is true, up until GN. That's it. Okay? And since at every point of time you know what goal you are working on, you sort of know what actions are relevant. One thing that progression didn't seem to have is it just does stuff and sees if it fell into the goal state. Okay? And the idea, means ends analysis, is essentially saying you know where you want to get to, you know what means you have, and you compare them. Okay? The goal that you want and the action that you need to do. Okay? And so that's basically the idea of STRIPS. Okay? So start from the, if you have G1 and G2, let's say, you start from the initial state, do some actions until you get to a state where G1 is true. And then from there, do some actions until you get to a state where G2 is true. That's it. Okay? And in doing this, essentially, it turns out that it has a beautiful way of doing this. All it does is it maintains a stack of goals and actions. And it just keeps popping them. Okay? And that's the little algorithm that I wrote there. Let me just take you through it. Okay, so this is this idea that I told you earlier. If you have a top level goal, set of goals G1 to GN, okay, you can always make a dummy action D whose effect is done and whose preconditions are G1 to GN. And it doesn't change the problem. Now the problem is be done. Okay, and if you ever got to a state where G1 to GN are true, then you do this done action and you'll be done. Okay. So it's a useful thing because I can write a simpler algorithm that way. So let D be this action and initialize a goal stack GS. This goal stack, as you will see, contains a stack of goals, actions. But a bunch of goals, maybe an action or two, an action, and then again a bunch of goals, and then maybe an action. Okay, you'll see as it goes. Okay. Now, so I'm actually initializing the goal stack GS with the top level goal, which is to be done. Okay. And initialize my initial state to the current initial state, where I am, where the problem's initial state. Okay, and then call a recursive procedure STRIPS on INGS. Okay, and this recursive procedure says, if my goal stack is empty, sheesh, I thought I put it off. I should take the call, Julian, he does, right? Okay. If what are we doing here? Yeah. If the goal stack is empty, then you're done. You have nothing to do. So you say, I succeeded. If it's not empty, then you pop it. You take the top of the goal stack. Okay, and you work on it. And if the top of the goal stack is an action, okay, then what you need to do is you actually simulate the execution of that action from the initial state. You can be sure that when you pop the action, it will be applicable in the current initial state because of the way the rest of the algorithm works. Okay? So you apply the action, you get a new initial state. Okay? And then, of course, if this element E, this should be E, if the element E is not an action but it's a goal, then check if it is true in the initial state. If it is true, then you don't have to work on it. So you have done one more goal out. Okay. So in that case, you call strips again with the same initial state and the rest of the goal stack. And forget about this piece. Okay. Same initial state and the rest of the goal stack. And this is the interesting part, which is I picked a goal. It's not true in the initial state. What do I need to do? I need to put an action which will give that goal. So what do? I pick an action A which has an effect G, throw it into the stack. Now since I put action A onto the stack, it's not going to just do it itself, it needs its preconditions to be true. You throw all its preconditions on top of that action. Now you have a bigger stack, okay? Action as well as its preconditions. Now you call the strips again. So what would strips do? It will basically work on making those preconditions true. When it is made the preconditions true, then it would be in a state where the preconditions are true. Then you can do the action. Then you, in essence, have done the G. It's the same simple stack algorithm. Cute. How can you not like it, right? Now, there are two important things. There's a choice point here and a choice point here. The choice point here is there may be multiple actions that can give the goal G. You have to basically backtrack on all possible of those. Okay, you remember one, and if you ever fail and come all the way back, you have to consider a different action for the same goal. And then the choice point here is more interesting. Okay, what happens here is that you're trying to put the preconditions of the action onto the stack. But the order in which you put the preconditions onto the stack matters, because that is the order in which you work on the goals. And if you have n goals, you have just n factorial orders, and you just backtrack on all of them. Throw one, and then if it doesn't work, consider the other. If it doesn't work, consider the other. Okay? Now, in fact, notice that when the algorithm starts first time, basically, you have initialized the stack with the goal done, right? The goal done, okay? So it's not this, it's not an action. The goal is not, stack is not empty, and done is not an action. So what you actually do is you look for an action that gives done, and the only thing that you have is this dummy action which says, I'll give you done if you work on my top level, my goals, G1 to GN, my preconditions G1 to GN. And so you essentially consider doing G1 to GN in all permutations. Okay? That's what you do. And, you know, if you ever, you know, have goal stack becomes empty, you're done. So this is how you write an algorithm for the simple idea that I mentioned earlier, which is you get the initial state all the way to G1, okay, and then from there all the way to G2, and from there all the way to G3. And this is sort of like what you were saying, you know, look for islands, you know, rather than just go all the way to the final state, look for islands. And then the progress towards the island, in essence, once you pick G1, you notice that once you pick a G, you sort of go backward again, because you're picking the action that is relevant to the goal and putting it in. So action selection is always being done, not blindly, but in the context of a goal to be satisfied. So are we going forward or going backward? We are thinking backward, going forward. Okay, we are thinking backward in terms of you know, the goals being goals and sub-goals, but the actions, whenever an action is actually at the top of the stack, you apply that action and progress the initial state. So it's a weird thingy. It's neither progression nor regression. So you would think if it does both, it should be more complete than progression and regression together. Can you think of this algorithm failing? First of all, can you think of this algorithm being efficient? And you know, one of the nice things is that this algorithm was brought up because it's cognitively plausible. Because people think this is how we do planning. But people don't do planning. You know, if their first way of doing stuff doesn't work, they say, to heck with it. Okay? Which is exactly how this algorithm is supposed to work. If its first way of picking the actions and the first way of picking the order of goals is not working, it says, it's not supposed to happen. Okay, in fact, one of the beautiful quotes about planning literature in general was again by this guy, Drew McDermott, I mentioned earlier, you know, the guy who gave the Lisp syntax, who essentially once said that search is given very little attention in this field, other than putting a footnote saying backtracking was used whenever there was a failure. And if you remember from the search literature, backtracking is saying, I'm dumb, I have no idea. All I can do is I'll just yell at the last guy. That's what is backtracking. That's what is backtracking. Just yell at the last guy. Okay. So actually, strips can be made really inefficient, even on the problems it solves. Okay? Because if it picked the wrong action first to support a goal, or picked wrong permutation out of n factorial permutation, it has to backtrack. And when it backtracks, unless it does intelligent backtracking, which is a huge big problem altogether there, it can, you know, go into la la land. Okay, as long as things go fine, it's fine. It's like our Iraq policy. And you know, once things start going bad, you know, you were supposed to work. They were supposed to stand and, you know, welcome us, and this planner is not. Okay? So there is the efficiency issue. Forget about efficiency. Let's allow inefficiency. Is it going to be complete? So if you live long enough, will it solve every problem which has a solution? Not you. You don't get to talk. Okay. It doesn't do that. Yeah, in this case it doesn't. No, strips doesn't worry about protecting. Strips doesn't worry about, by the way, this, again, you know, these are all guys who actually, people know how to yell at strips, you know, in planning community. No, strips doesn't. it's a beautifully, see, it's again, that's the thing. If it works on the first go, why do you need to protect? It's supposed to work. Everything is supposed to work right, and so you don't need to protect. This protection is defeatist mentality, thinking that things will go wrong. Right? You know, you should be optimistic. And Strips was optimistic, if nothing else. Okay. But even if it, in fact, you consider, again, you know, the thing about Strips is it is cognitively plausible. So if you ask people, how do you do planning, they tend to say this way, apparently, at any rate. What?
They tried something.
Something, yeah. Okay, so here's the question. So anyway, that's you know, just to say that there is a real planner which worked. I can't even make the, I don't know how to do this, but let me show you. And I put a link there, but let's see if I can see. It actually even shows, like, it works on blocks. Oh my God, what is that? Okay, see, there's a red block. This is the real red block. You know, when we talk about blocks, this is where all of them started. Okay, so there is the Shaky the robot, and if you hear it with sound, which I don't know how to do right now, it really shakes and makes a lot of noise. That's why it was called Shaky. Okay, it's a very scientific reason. And so anyway, in fact, this is a planner which, to give it credit where credit is due, this was a project where they just didn't do the single part of give me a problem, I'll solve it, and I'll deal with, you know, let other people deal with the rest. It was an integrated system where they had to make the robot, They had to make the blocks, they had to paint the blocks, and they had to make the plan, they had to execute the plan, and if the plan fails, they had to replan. They had to do the whole thing. So there is a lot, you know, and plus they were doing it in 72 when most of you weren't born. So, you know, there's a lot that, what, see, do you see how nicely it's shaking? It was sort of like a dance, I guess, but, so it's the prob, that's particular, that's the planner that, sheesh, that's the planner that strips, that's the planner strips that Shaky used, okay? And the strips action representation, strips assumption also were used in the planner, but the main planning algorithm is this. Do you people understand this? Isn't it more complex than the simpler ones that we did? So why would you want to work with the simpler one? It makes no sense. You know, it's like much, this one has much nicer stack, popping up, popping down, all that stuff. Now the problem is it doesn't, it has incompleteness. It's actually inefficient. When things go wrong, then it's pretty darn bad, okay? And it's also incomplete. And so it started a huge cottage industry in planning, which is how to make strips complete. Okay, so you come up with a flawed idea, and, you know, I don't want to bring up Iraq again, but you keep trying to make it work. Okay, so in this case, what we have here is there are tons of problems where strips will fail. And a canonical problem where strips failed is called Sussman anomaly. There's this guy called Gerald Sussman in MIT who first thought of this problem. And so he feels really sad that even though he did lots and lots of stuff, the only thing that anybody remembers about him is this Sussman anomaly, which is this one little black hole problem that strips can't solve. Okay, and it's emblematic, I mean it's symptomatic of the strips problem. Okay, here is this. Basically, when does strips fail? Strips fails if there is no way of completely achieving G1, and then from there achieving G2. You may have to do partial progress towards G1, do some of the steps for G2, then complete the rest of the steps for G1, then the rest of the steps for G2. This happens all the time, okay?
You have to redefine your steps. You break those
Yes. But look at, that's a very good point. That's a very good point, but strips doesn't, okay? And so there's a way, but in trying to do that differentiation, we would actually have to differentiate between planning order and execution order. Okay, the way you think about the world, the goals during planning should not be in any way constrain the way you execute the action. The way you execute the action should be just the forward direction. Okay, but strips, because of this step, where when an action becomes applicable, it actually applies it and takes the initial state forward to the next state. When it did that, it in essence deterministically connected execution order to the planning order, because of which it fails. Okay? So here in this particular case, if all you need to do is to put A on top of B and B on top of C, okay, in the initial state you have C on top of A and B is on the table. So in this case, you can easily see that there is no way of achieving AB and then from there achieving BC and having both be true. Or achieving BC and then achieving AB and then both be true. Right? Do you agree? Because if you achieve on AB in this case, you can start with on AB first and then on BC. Okay? To achieve on AB, you put C down, put A on top of B. And now, from that state, to put achieve on BC, you would put A down, put B on top of C. Now, A is not on top of B, is on top of C. So that didn't work. So you do the opposite order. So instead of AB first, BC, you try BC first. It again fails. To mess with your minds, let me say that Sussman anomaly is only an anomaly if you say that the goal state is on AB and on BC. If you actually give the picture, it's not an anomaly. Why? Picture is complete. Picture also tells you on C table. Okay? So if you wrote on AB and on BC and on C table, Stips can solve it. Okay? This actually should mess with your mind, because on one hand, do you want a complete goal state or you want a partial goal state? Which is better? Well, on one hand, if you, all you care about is two state variables, why should I give you a overly constrained, suppose there are 10,000 state variables and all I really want is state variable 15 should be true and state variable 9,004 should be false. That's all I care. So why should you force me to make it a complete goal state? It looks as if, you know, having partial goal state is good for the user as well as good for the planner, because it has fewer things to work on. But on the other hand, I'm also telling you that actually having complete goal state is better. And it's not surprising at all. In fact, if you have complete goal state, some of the problems that we talked about for the regression will disappear. Right? It's no longer 3 power n states. It will only be 2 power n states if it is a complete goal state. Okay? So that's Sussman anomaly, and Stips can't solve it. Now, so then the next thing you should try to do is, that's a bad problem. Sussman only would think about it, you know. So let's come up with the class of problems that Stips is complete for and say those are the good planning problems, right? And so what are that class of planning problems? Basically, the planning problems that Stips can solve. And we'll give it a different name called a serializable problem, okay? A problem is considered to have a serializable set of goals if there is an order in which you can work on the goals one after other such that you have a solution. If the problem was inherently serializable, Stips will solve it. So then the next question is, can we quickly find a test which will tell me whether or not Stips will solve the problem? Yes. The test is let Stips solve. And if it solves, it solves. If not, it doesn't. This is exactly like perceptrons and linearity assumption. Okay? So perceptrons can only learn concepts that are linearly separable. So a reasonable thing to do is before you start learning a concept, check whether it's linearly separable or not, and then use perceptrons. The easiest way of checking whether a concept is linearly separable or not is to use perceptrons. Okay? So that's the idea for Stips. And finally, the main reason why this problem occurs for Stips is exactly because it cannot separate planning, which is the thinking order, from execution, which is the doing order. Okay? And, you know, there is no real reason for Stips to have, so the main step that kills Stips is exactly this step, where it takes the initial state forward by applying the action. When it did it, in essence, even if, in fact, when it's doing this, it's not actually doing the action in the real world. It's not doing the action in the real world. It's only doing it in the head. But it's unnecessarily pushing itself into a corner in its own head. Okay? And there are like a large number of ideas that were explored to keep Stips the way it is, while somehow magically making it complete. And it turns out that there is no way of doing it. Okay? Unless, as I said, it turns out I can say, well, all you need to do is separate planning and execution order. And that's sort of what he was referring to. But the problem is, there is no easy way of doing it without giving up all these beautiful stacks and, you know, the simple way the Stips work. Okay? Notice that this problem doesn't exist for progression planners. It doesn't exist for regression planners. Both of them were complete. Stips, on the other hand, isn't complete. But it's worth understanding Stips mostly as a historical footnote because it's a big footnote. People talk a lot about it, and people, you know, make connections to Stips. In particular, one other unfortunate terminology that developed in the context of Stips is this notion of linearity. Okay, so the idea was, rather than talk about serializability of sub-goals, people have developed this notion of linearity assumption, which was supposed to mean sub-goals were serializable. Okay, and then so if a planner can only solve if a planner makes a linearity assumption, which STRIPS makes, then it won't solve non-linear problems. Okay, the reason I'm bringing this up is essentially this is the kind of terminology that you should, it has been used already. So if you ever come across it, you should at least know that all we are talking about in the linear and non-linear is not about the action orderings at all. It's about the serializability of subgoals. Okay? And in particular, what STRIPS can't solve, if you define what STRIPS can't solve as a non-linear problem, the problem with that terminology is that that makes you think that the non-linear problems can only be solved by non-linear planners, which is okay. I didn't define what non-linearity is, but people tend to also think that ordering is somehow connected to non-linearity. And so somehow non-linear problems can only be solved by partially ordered planners. But that's bogus, because every problem that can be solved by progression and regression planners. Okay? So the next idea that I wanted to, so I threw this in, as I said, you know, in the past for a while I haven't been talking about STRIPS planning in the last few offerings, but I thought I should bring this up because it's useful to know why people thought about it. It's a seductive idea, and as Santayana said, you know, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. So you might write a paper and then find out in the hard way that this is STRIPS reinvented. Okay. Okay. But there is a third idea, which is let's see. I'll go back and come back again. How to do planning? Go forward, go backward, and then I threw in a digression into STRIPS, which is doing thinking backward and going forward ideas together. And then a more general idea of doing planning is to think in the space of plans. Okay? So one funny thing about these two ideas is what you want are plans. What are plans? Plans are generalized course of actions. But what is explicit in both these search algorithms is the notion of state. Going forward in the space of states or going backward in the space of states. So somehow the plan is the path that you take. It was in the indirect, it was in the back. Okay? So if what I want is plans, why don't I directly search in the space of plans? Why worry about states? Okay? In a way, I can say that progression is already searching in the space of plans. What it is searching in is in the space of prefix plans. Okay, it considers small plan, you know, one action, two actions, three actions, four action plans. It's searching in the space of prefix plans. Okay. The important thing about prefix is that once you pick the prefix, then in that search path, you will never undo that prefix. You can only add to the prefix. You can never change the prefix. Okay. And similarly, regression corresponds to searching in the space of suffix plans. It's fixing the suffix. You'll never undo the suffix. In any particular search path, a specific suffix has already been determined. If that was the wrong suffix, the only way you can fix it is to backtrack all over that path, go into a different path. Okay. Now, a different way is to just say, I don't need prefix or suffix plans. So when I start thinking about a plan, you need to think about two important notions, position constrained versus precedence constrained. Okay? Prefix and suffix plans are basically position constrained. Okay? So this, you know, in a prefix plan, here is A1, star A2, star A3, blah, blah, blah. This is the first, this is the second, this is the third action. There is no way I can put an action in between these two because then that would become the second action. Whereas if I have precedence constrained, I would say A1 is before A2, somewhere before A2, and then A2 is before A3 in my current path. And, you know, as the path continues, I can always put A4 such that A1 is before A4 and A4 is before A2. And that doesn't undo anything. I still have accepted the previous precedences. I just threw in more guys. Okay? So, the most important difference between the state space planners of progression regression planners and the plan space planners that we'll talk more about next class, I guess, is this notion of position versus precedence constraining. Okay, partially ordered planners are plan space planners, essentially throw in actions into the plan and only put precedence restrictions between them as needed. Okay, and so of course, in essence, these precedences may sometimes define a total order, but more generally, they define a partial order over the action. And you may be done, that means you are probably done in the sense that what you are holding, which is a partial ordering on the actions, is such that any topological sort on that partial order will work. That means if you execute them in any topological sort of that partial order, then you would go from the initial state to goal state. Okay, so that's what partial order planners try to do. Okay, and I'll make the connection and then we'll come back and talk next class. Essentially, what the basic idea of partial order planning can come from the idea of proving a plan using causal reasoning. Okay. If I have a plan, and I say, here's a plan for the initial state and goal state that you gave me, and you want to call my bluff, you say, I don't believe you. How can you call my bluff? How do you prove or disprove that this is a plan? One way you already know is you do all the actions from the initial state until all the actions are done, in which case the final state check if all the goals are true. If they are not, then you call my bluff. That's one way of proving correctness. The other is to do regression. Do all the actions in the reverse way in your mind, okay? And check if the final state that you got is subsumed by the initial state, in which case, again, it's correct. A third way is actually a more general way, which is all you are going to say is for every goal in the plan, and when I say goal, either the top level goals or the preconditions of the action, because as I said, goals and preconditions are connected. Every goal and a precondition needs to be supported. That means somebody must have given them. Somebody should have made them true. So every precondition or goal must be made true by somebody. And having made true by somebody, between the time when, you know, somebody has made this true and the place where they are being used, nobody should come in between and delete it. If I can prove for every goal and precondition in the plan that there is an establisher, that means a step which gives the value, and after that establisher there is no collaborator, nobody is killing that after that establisher. If I do this for every precondition and goal, it's a conjunction of huge number of small proofs, then I have proved the plan to be correct. Okay, and whenever you have a way of proving the correctness of something, you can invert the proof and you have a search. That's a general way of thinking about where search algorithms come from. Okay, if you know how to prove something to be correct, you can invert it and search to make it true that way. Okay, and what partial order planners do essentially is try to construct an entity which is a partial ordering of actions such that every top level goal and precondition has an establisher, and once they are established, there is no clobber. That's what they do. Okay? And once they do it, and once they have made sure that everybody is supported and nobody's support is being violated, you have a correct plan. And when you do that, you essentially would only have put the least number of constraints that are needed, least number of ordering constraints that are needed to make all the guys be supported and none of them be violated. And the plan for that may well be partially ordered. So you won't unnecessarily order actions unless that's needed. Okay? So partial ordering winds up generating, this kind of a planning winds up generating plans which are partially ordered such that every every topological sort would be a solution. We'll look at this. Once again, this particular algorithm is worth reading. You should look at the textbook description, and we'll go into the details again next class. It's again an algorithm which doesn't have any fatal flaws. Unlike STRIPS, which does have fatal flaws, partial order planning has no fatal flaws, but it's not one of the big contenders right now as far as generating plans fast for deterministic or classical planning problems. However, lot of people, there are enough things in this algorithm, in this way of looking at plan generation, that are relevant for a whole bunch of other things, such as management of plans, execution of plans, replanning, and so on and so forth, that it is worth understanding this view of how to generate plans. Okay? So we'll do that next class. Okay?